This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and I'm coming to you on this 16th day of July 2011 here in Japan. It's the 15th of July back in the United States, where I'm joined by Christina Borgeson, a graduate of Boston University School of Public Communication and the Graduate School of Journalism at Columbia. She was a former award-winning producer for CBS, CNN, and PBS before going on to put together two books of media criticism, Feet to the Fire, The Media After 9/11, Top Journalists Speak Out, and Into the Buzzsaw, Leading Journalists Expose the Myth of a Free Press. Christina, thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right. Well, as I'm sure you and the listeners out there are well aware by now, the media empire of Rupert Murdoch is being threatened right now by the phone hacking scandal that has enveloped News Corporation and has forced Murdoch to shutter the 168-year-old British institution, the News of the World. And in the latest developments, News International CEO Rebecca Brooks has resigned. The UK Parliament has called on Murdoch and his son to testify at a parliamentary probe looking into the affair, and Murdoch himself has apologized to the family of murder victim Millie Dowler, whose phone was hacked into by the News of the World. Christina, your thoughts on this unfolding scandal and the response that has taken place to it so far?
You know, my response is basically this. We are now into the full-blown reptilian age of information. And this media consolidation stuff is just, to me, it's sort of this moving towards this end game where these large media corporations control the information that we have, that the public receives, large sectors of the public receive on matters of critical importance, like, you know, when we're going to war and why, et cetera. And then the rest is bread and circuses, and they'll go to no lengths, obviously, to get information from the public and from situations like these tragedies, the 9/11 hacking into the phones of these victims. And I just think that it's no holds bars. They're not really accountable to anyone, and they operate with impunity until something like this happens. And you read these read Rupert Murdoch's media empire explodes, et cetera, et cetera. And certainly, I think that this is a big problem for the Murdoch empire right now. But of course, I don't think his empire is exploding by any means. I think this is something that he's going to weather quite well, thank you very much. And that has everything to do with all the links, interconnections, and so on that he and his empire have with the political world and the legal world. I mean, look at the prime minister's communications guy was a News of the World editor, wasn't he? The interconnection is so complete at this point that I just don't think. I think it's terrible. I think it's an expose of how horrible things are, how dirty the information world is, both in terms of the information that is put out and the way that information is acquired.
Well, that's right, and I think it's something that few people, including myself, really understood the extent of before this scandal started to break, is how intertwined the Murdoch and his media outlets are with the political establishment in the UK, certainly, and in other countries as well. And it's a fact that Murdoch himself has had the ear of basically every prime minister since Margaret Thatcher. And there's been a number of scandals in the UK about him meeting personally with a number of prime ministers. But I think it was Blair, or perhaps it was Gordon Brown, who came out and said, "Well, there's nothing wrong with." It was Gordon Brown's communication minister, if I remember correctly.
It was Cameron, I believe. It was Cameron's communication minister. I'm looking for the notes. I had some notes here, but Andy. His name's Andy Coulson. And he's Cameron's communications chief, and he was editor of News of the World. And he was, and while he was editor of News of the World, he'd hired some detective with a criminal record, and a guy who was being looked at for as having possibly committed a murder. And here's David Cameron, you know, bloviating in Parliament about this Murdoch thing and how, you know, let the investigation unfold, and you know, it'll take a little while. But, and of course, you know, the French, they have a the French have the expression "l'enquête se poursuit," you know, which is, yes, the investigation is underway, and of course that's a famous way of letting things go on forever and die out and then just disappear as an issue. So look, I'm not surprised here because Fox News, for example, which is, you know, a Murdoch property. Fox News is basically the Republican Party's media outlet, and the power that it wields in this country is just absolutely terrifying. And not just because that's what it is, you know, but because the information it puts out is just so completely tainted, sometimes false. It's like a very loud and very powerful propaganda machine. And, you know, when you have some businessman, some Australian businessman who controls, you know, the democratic conversation in this country, it's really, or the public conversation about how we're going to, you know, be in this country politically and so on, it's really, really terrifying. And then you get these political figures that emerge, you know, like the Sarah Palins of the world. Sarah Palin, I don't know how else to put it. I mean, I do not, you know, want to insult her on a personal level, but on a political level, and certainly on the level of someone who would be a heartbeat away from the presidency, she's utterly provincial, uninformed, and ignorant about, you know, world affairs. And here she is, a big star, and now comes Buchanan, who's, I mean, it's the same thing all over again, but even worse, I think. I mean, I think she's even more provincial.
Do you mean Michelle Bachmann?
Kind of Michelle Bachmann, I'm sorry. What did I say?
Buchanan?
Buchanan, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say Buchanan. I correct myself, Michelle Buchanan, Bachmann, yes. I mean, it's just absolutely terrifying. It's just bread and circuses. And now, of course, we've got this, and the whole, you know, this whole reptilian behind-the-scenes, covert, operating, news-gathering, aspect of news-gathering now, I mean, I think that's been going on for a while, you know. And I think also, you know, there have been counters to that because, I mean, look at Wikipedia, for example. So it's like this whole, really, anybody hacking into a cell phone is not that hard to do, you know. So all this, you know, all this invasion of privacy on the parts of various parties is very, very troubling and very Orwellian. And here, at least, with this scandal, you get a good view of how it works. But I don't think you're going to get any relief from it because people like Murdoch, you know, they don't suffer for very long because they're extremely powerful and they're members of a power elite at the highest levels, a planetary power elite that does get away with, you know, just about everything.
Unfortunately, that seems to be the case, and it really raises the question of how one person is really able to manage to construct such a media empire. How did Rupert Murdoch really begin to put all of this media clout together, and how did this happen without political interference to stop this from really taking place?
Well, first of all, he's an Australian businessman, okay, and I think you know, as in this country, as deregulation of everything, you know, occurred. First of all, he's a businessman, and he's a very good businessman, okay? I mean, you can't fault the guy for being as successful as he is, but deregulation, of course, came about as a result of the fact that our you know, this country's, you know, the political representatives for this country, I mean, they're no longer representing the people at large. They're representing whoever pays for their campaign, you know. And the people who put in the most money for these campaigns, they are businesses, okay? And I mean, it is not an exaggeration to call this country, our country, a corporatocracy. I mean, that's, it is what it is, you know, and I think planetarily it's becoming a corporatocracy, and a corporatocracy eventually leads to sort of the third world situation where you've got this little group here that has all the resources and all the power, and everybody else, you know, everybody else is below, maybe with a thin belt of technocrats in between, but you know, he built it because he built it, you know, the way any good businessman builds it. You know, he buys properties. If the laws are not with him, he makes sure he pays off people to lobby, and he pressures and he pushes and he builds and he pressures, pushes and builds, and that's how it's been done. And in a sense, you can't just look at Rupert Murdoch and say, oh, you know, he's the villain here. You can't look at Berlusconi, even though he, as a person, you know, Berlusconi is not my favorite my favorite human being in terms of how he treats people. But you know, he whether he does it legally or illegally, honestly or dishonestly, you know, the guy has hustled to the point where he's like, he's the biggest media mogul around, you know. And so, you know, he had a lot of help. They didn't do it single-handedly. And so what that tells you is the corruption, you know, how easily corruptible, you know, the public's representatives are. And it becomes this end game where, you know, they become more and more powerful. They become more and more able to corrupt people. It's either my way or the highway, or as they used to say in, or plomo or plata, you know, plata or plomo, as they say, the drug dealers tell people that they want, need cooperation from. I mean, the pressure becomes too great to resist for whatever reason, you know, and so it, it just keeps going, and it gets, the situation becomes more and more extreme, and what we're looking at is just the next level of extreme.
Well, as with any major scandal like this, what we're presented with is an opportunity to reflect societally on things like Murdoch and people like that who have managed to amass all of this wealth and power in such few hands, and really examine whether we want that in our society. Do you see that type of conversation emerging from this scandal? And if not, why not?
Well, it's so interesting because I've been watching, like, Rachel Maddow. She had Bill Moyers on, and you know, you have all these pundits talking about it, and oh, you know, the laws will have to take care of this, and oh, well, media consolidation, and oh, you know, everybody always says the same thing. Oh, these are the problems, the media consolidation, the this and that, and you know, when you say things like media consolidation or you know, you use these terms that don't implicate specific individuals. But the fact of the matter is, at some point, whether it's Rupert Murdoch building his empire or Berlusconi or anybody else, at some point, you know, every individual who crossed the line or did something that was maybe not illegal but immoral or wrong or not good for journalists, even the journalists who work for them, you know, they make that choice. Okay? The journalists who go and they, you know, like when Coulson, he goes and hires this detective to go invade people's privacy, you know, as a member of News of the World, and now he's working for Cameron, the Prime Minister of England. So I mean, illegal, immoral, people are willing to cross lines, and large numbers of people are willing to cross lines, and they do it with impunity, and this is what happens. We finally get this this hyper reptilian age where a lot of the information on real stuff that's going on is complete fabrication, because it's myth upon myth upon myth being presented to the public about, you know, for example, Afghanistan, you know, why we're in Afghanistan, or how, you know, why we went into Iraq. And so, you know, on that information, you know, it's complete, it's the propagandist's ultimate message, you know, or ultimate storyline. And then on this other stuff, which is, you know, really what they want to focus on, because, you know, it doesn't affect powers that be. It doesn't, you know, it's not looking into what the powerful are doing with our resources and the lives of our citizens. It's, you know, oh, gee, you know, what did this murder victim, you know, what did this murder victim's family, you know, what are they up to, you know, and it's just absolutely obscene. And so it's not that this is a significant story in the larger scheme of things, but the fact that you're willing to hack into people's phones to get this, to get information to the point where you actually create this heartache for the victim's family members, it's just obscene, you know, and it's unnecessary. And it's for stories and that are, you know, they may be human interest stories. They're not even that important, you know? And it's just, it's devastating to our societies. It really is. Because we just become this diminished, uncivil, you know, falling backwards into the dark ages, the Hobbesian, you know, muck that we came from, that we fought ourselves out of, you know, for a few hundred years, or maybe a couple of that, you know, yeah, hundreds of years.
Well, that's an interesting observation, because it is interesting how this scandal has blown up so widely and is now being followed, and parliamentary inquiries are taking place and things of that nature. But for instance, in the lead up to the war in Iraq, when the media was obviously so complicit in that lead up and was used basically as a mouthpiece for the political establishment, which was on the record, according to Downing Street memo and other documents, was really attempting to steer the public into a war without proper intelligence. I mean, in that case, there was no major scandal and no parliamentary inquiries and no major outcry. Why is that?
Well, because now you're touching upon decisions made by the power elite that are using the public public treasure and public lives to push agendas, to push enormous agendas. Okay, that are going to create a lot of deaths, that are going to spend, you know, again, public treasure. Those issues they like to keep, you know, the down and dirty details of those issues are kept well under wraps. Okay, and with, of course, the complicity of the reporters, and any reporter who asks the wrong question. When these things are unfolding, the reporters that ask the wrong questions or dig too deeply or whatever, I mean, those reporters are ejected from the system, and the reporters who actually, you know, see themselves as, you know, the public servants that reporters should be, I mean, those people are consistently marginalized. Okay, so the other quote news product, besides the okay, here's what's going on in the world, you know, with the big events like the war in Iraq or how we want to get into Iran, etc., you know, we're going to create the storyline and the propaganda for that. And, you know, if you're a good if you're a nice journalist with a pleasant face and, you know, willing to put this out, we're going to pay you hundreds of thousands of dollars a year or millions of dollars a year to be the public face of our network. And then on the other side, the stuff that gets the ratings and that the advertisers like to hang their products on, you know, the salacious stuff like who killed whom, who's boinking whom, who's whatever, you know, that stuff is it's as it's as important to the, it's more, even it's even more important to the bottom line, because that's where you really get the viewership and the readership. And so, you know, if you have to hack into a few private phones to get the information that gives you a leg up on this story, you know, so be it. And oh well, you get caught. Oh well, okay, so you have a little scandal. L'enquête se poursuit, as I said before, you have this long investigation, so everything dies down and the public forgets, because, you know, the public has a short attention span. And, you know, Murdoch does his little, you know, he can shut News of the World and he'll build something else, you know, somewhere else with a different name. I mean, businesses do that all the time. They go out of business and then they set up the same business under another name. I mean, Murdoch, this is a bump in the road for a guy like Murdoch, but for our society, it really lifts the veil on how horrific news gathering methods have become. And, you know, and then, of course, it the spotlight turns to the news itself, the information itself. And that's a whole, you know, that's as horrific, too, because it's crap information, and it's information about people under the most, you know, in the most terrible circumstances. And there we are with our noses pressed to the window watching this some awful tragedy unfold when, you know, we've got, you know, the banking crisis, we've got people trying to push us into a war with Iran, we've got stuff going on, you know, people dying in Afghanistan. I mean, come on.
Christina,
oh,
tell
you
us
really got me started.
I can see that for sure. Well, tell us about your books, Feet to the Fire and Into the Buzzsaw, and what people can learn in those books.
Well, Into the Buzzsaw, basically, it's a book that will, what I did, it's an anthology of stories, including mine, as I was trying to cover what really happened behind the tragedy of the explosion of TWA 800 off the coast of Long Island. It was the most controversial airline investigation, probably in aviation history, certainly in U.S. aviation history, and still trying to get to the bottom of that. But, you know, I had always, you know, I was reared in Haiti, where, you know, if they didn't like, under Papa Doc, they didn't like a journalist, they just chopped their head off. And me, I ran into what I call the buzzsaw because I thought, oh, this is a free press, you know. I'm hearing some stories from law enforcement people who are actually out there picking up the remains of the plane, saying, you know, there's some weird stuff going on here. And boy, CBS shut me down. It's a, you know, you can read my story and Into the Buzzsaw. But then I started realizing, oh, my God, people who do these stories, looking into high level government or business malfeasance, you know, they lose their jobs. There's this whole system of censorship here in this country that I wasn't even aware of. And it is, it's extremely subtle sometimes. It's less subtle now. But so I gathered the stories of a bunch of award-winning reporters talking about their experiences with censorship in the country. And so then, when during the run-up to the Iraq War, I was watching what was going on, and I was just absolutely stunned. I was appalled at the fact that nobody was asking the right questions. Nobody was putting our leaders' feet to the fire. No, you know, nobody was holding Congress accountable for anything in terms of asking questions. And, you know, Bush and Cheney and Condoleezza Rice were going on the TV shows and lying to the public about, you know, what intelligence had found, and they were planning stories in the New York Times and then saying, oh, the New York Times said, you know, be careful about the mushroom clouds, you know, and the New York Times was, you know, Judith Miller was cooperating with Cheney's office. I mean, the whole thing was just, it was just obscene. And so, Feet to the Fire, I went back to all these top reporters, you know, from Ted Koppel to, you know, the president and CEO of the Associated Press and a lot of big people to say, hey, what happened? Why didn't you ask the questions? And it was absolutely fascinating to get their responses, because you just start realizing that each reporter lives in his own reality that is set by, you know, where he's working. They know in the mainstream, and I work for them. I work for CBS. You know, I work for CNN. You know, there is a limit beyond which you do not go. So if you have a 12-inch truth, for example, I'm just saying, if you have an issue and there's 12 inches of information, well, if you're in the mainstream, you might go 2 inches into that because the rest is not acceptable to the corporation, to the company. And so, I mean, when you hear people like Ted Koppel say that he's never been censored, even though one of his Nightline shows was not carried by a bunch. He did a Nightline show where he just aired the faces of the people who had died in Iraq, you know, the names and faces of the soldiers who had died in Iraq, and this conservative network that of affiliates, they refused to run that Nightline show. And, you know, from Ted's paradigm, it was not censorship. It was their business decision. So when news becomes a commodity as opposed to information that the public should have, that's what you get. You get censorship that's not called censorship. So that's what the books were. I mean, basically, Feet to the Fire is Into the Buzzsaw, but looking at one issue. And it's very intense because a lot of money and a lot of lives, you know, have been spent on these wars and have increased the dangers to our nation and our citizens as a result. And it's also exposed the fact that, you know, our leadership are no longer representing the majority of people in this country. They're representing the people who have the power and resources and money to pay them for their to get elected and to pressure them and get them out of pay to get them out of office if they don't respond accordingly,
or use their news empire to get them out of office if they happen to have one, like Rupert Murdoch. This raises so many incredibly fascinating threads of conversation, and I'd love to have you on another time to talk about TWA 800 and the investigation into that. Sure. Another fascinating topic. But just finally today, perhaps we can wind up this conversation by talking about the alternative media and how it's been empowered by the internet to go, as you put it before, 12 inches into the 12-inch story instead of the 2 inches that are allowed in the corporate-controlled establishment media. What do you think is the ultimate effect of this type of alternative media that has arisen on the internet, and do you think it can be an effective counterweight to the major news networks?
Well, I mean, what is starting to happen is this is like a new, it's a new paradigm that still is kind of in its infancy, and the minute these, I don't like to call them alternate, because alternate to what exactly? You know, these are independent journalism outlets, okay, that are really reporting without fear or favor, that are willing to look at what the powerful are doing and to report what they're doing without worrying about what's going to happen, and every once in a while they jangle a nerve, or they cross, they get a lot of attention because the internet is fantastic. You know, somebody picks up a story and sends it out through, you know, the internet, through the blogs, through Twitter, Facebook, etc. You can hit what I call the 100th monkey phase, and all of a sudden the mainstream, which are still considered, you know, the mass media, they have to address the issue. But more and more what's happening is that the television outlets, a lot of the mass media outlets, New York Times, etc., they're just losing audience, because people are realizing the product that they're putting out is just not explaining what's going on, you know? Because if you keep putting out the official source reporting, and so you have to, every new thing that happens with a big story, you're taking those official source myths, and you have to build on those, eventually you just don't make any sense. And that's what's happening with a lot of this reporting that's coming out of the mainstream, so people are looking elsewhere. And then again, other people who aren't even journalists, okay, are coming out and, you know, using their expertise to expose aspects of these major issues. I mean, look at this guy, Craig Ferguson, who came out with Inside Job, who explained it beautifully. You know, it was an amazing film. And yet, you know, Dan Rather was going around on the media, on television, on the mainstream media, and going, well, you know, the reason why we don't do this reporting on banking very well is because it's all kind of boring and it's complicated. And Craig Ferguson showed in one documentary, not only is it not boring, but it's not that complicated either, and it involves all of us and our money and the fact that we're now, you know, the United States is an emerging third world nation with its middle class and its lower classes just descending into, you know, poverty. So, you know, these independent outlets, I don't like to call them alternative because I don't think there is an alternative to these people. You know, these reporters, you know, these independent outlets are starting to suck the air out of the room for the mainstream media. And the funny thing about the mainstream media is you go to these journalism conferences and, you know, they go, well, you know, it's people aren't reading anymore, so the papers are dying. People just aren't paying attention to the serious issues. That's why, you know, we're dying. You know, this outlet is losing audience and this and that. And never once is it ever mentioned that their own corruption and their failure to courageously and accurately report what the powerful are doing behind the scenes to create these situations and to promote these situations, you know, like the Iraq War, like the banking crisis, okay? Never once do they ever look at their own corruption and say, you know what, we should have stepped forward. We should have done those stories, you know? So...
Absolutely, absolutely true. I think there's a considerable lack of self-reflection among the establishment media about why people are turning away from them in droves. But again, I think you've hit on many of the really important issues here today. And this is, a fascinating conversation that I hope we can continue at a later date, because there's a lot to be discussed here, obviously, and a lot of threads to be picked up on. But let's leave it there for now. So, Christina Borgeson, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today.
My pleasure.